Welcome, everyone, to a new edition of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, and so pleased that you could join us again this week. Per usual, we want you to check us out every week on Blog Talk Radio and subscribe to us on iTunes. I will be joined, as always, by partners in crime, Hub Arkish, the editor and publisher of Pro Football Weekly, my co-host Nate Atkins, and Kevin Fishbane. And we are going to break down all of the skill position talent around the NFL. Last week we focused on the quarterbacks. Now we are going to kind of get into the weapons that they are using. Last week on the PFW podcast, we took a look at the quarterbacks around the league. This week, in similar fashion, Hub Arkish, Nate Atkins, Kevin Fishbane, and I go around the room to discuss the various weapons that these quarterbacks will be using. Of course, if you caught this week's Way We Hear It, you heard some of the discussion of the offenses around the AFC and NFC East. If you haven't listened, be sure and do that. We'll start today's discussion with the AFC North.
Well, it's interesting. I would guess a lot of people might pick the Cincinnati Bengals again based on talent, based on the places they can go on offense, although the loss of Marvin Jones probably significant. But Nate Atkins, our associate editor, is specialized in this division for us. And Nate, I think you got to start in Pittsburgh. I know that the Martavis Bryant suspension is disappointing, but this team still has weapons everywhere. And the way that Big Ben put up points last year, it seems to be if he is able to stay healthy, he's going to have plenty to work with.
When you discuss the Steelers, health is the operative word on offense, because 2 years ago when they were healthy, they were one of the best offenses we've seen in a long, long time. And it just wasn't there last year, whether it was Kelvin Beachum's injury, and of course he's gone now at left tackle, whether it was Big Ben, whether it was Le'Veon Bell. And there's still some questions there, obviously, with Martavis Bryant out, with Bell working back from the ACL injury. But when you got a guy like Antonio Brown, arguably the best receiver in the league, and the way they draft a receiver, and if Big Ben is healthy, he's going to work with those weapons. I think they easily have the best weapons around a great quarterback here in the AFC North.
Yeah, Kevin, obviously you lose Martavis Bryant. That's a huge weapon. You've got Marcus Wheaton, who is similar, although not as accomplished. Everybody is talking Sammy Coates. And one big change for Big Ben, his security blanket is gone with Heath Miller retired. But you look at the signing of Ladarius Green. And then, of course, D'Angelo Williams behind Le'Veon Bell. It's hard to worry too much about the depth on this offense.
Yeah, folks in San Diego would talk about Ladarius Green really being the next Antonio Gates out there. And with his athleticism and finally being able to be a featured player in an offense, I'm curious to see what he does. As you mentioned, they are deep at wide receiver. They were able to withstand the hit of Bryant's injury. And heck, they're even deep at quarterback when you look at them bringing in Bruce Gradkowski to join Landry Jones, backing up on Roethlisberger, who rarely is able to play every snap in a season. So this is an offense that is locked and loaded and ready to be maybe the highest scoring team in the league.
Nate, I look at the Baltimore Ravens, and quite frankly, I scratch my head a little bit. We all know the ups and the downs with Joe Flacco. And when you talk about weapons, they've had a problem at wide receiver forever. Now, Breshad Perriman hopefully will be healthy for them this year. Last year's first-round pick. You look at running back and you see Justin Forsett. Maybe Buck Allen has taken that position over now. At tight end, they're bringing in, Ben Watson, who's, 72 or 73? Obviously, I'm kidding, but you get my point. This Ravens offense is obviously a work in progress, and I don't know. I don't see the home run hitter or the big threat the defenses are going to have to prepare for.
Yeah, I don't think there's one of those on this team, obviously. Steve Smith has been that guy in his career, but you're looking at a guy who's now 37 coming off a major injury, even though it's the first of his in a long time for him. You just wonder how he's going to be able to come back from that. And like you mentioned, Breshad Perriman, they went and they got him in the first round for a reason. He's got all kinds of size, but he's going to be completely unproven. Between the age and sort of the unproven commodities that Joe Flacco has around him and a quarterback who's never finished in the top 10 of passing yards in the league ever, you're just kind of wondering where the home run hitters are in this offense.
We look at the Cincinnati Bengals, and certainly with A.J. Green, you've got to keep a very close eye on that football team. Tyler Eifert emerged as one of the best red zone threats in the NFL last year. The loss of Marvin Jones is significant, but then you look at running back. Jeremy Hill, little bit of a sophomore slump last year, not horrible, but went from a 1,000-yard rusher as a rookie to just over 800 yards. And then you've got Giovanni Bernard, who's always a big breakaway threat. But sometimes in this case, you wonder wonder if it's not the guy pulling the trigger. I know we talked quarterback last week. There's a debate if it's the Red River rifle or the Red River BB gun, but whichever way it goes, it just seems like there is enough talent there for Dalton to make this one of the top offenses in the league. Nate, I'm missing something here. We know Mohamed Sanu is also gone. Marvin Jones is gone. How do they expect to fill out that wide receiver core?
Well, I think that's what they're looking at with Tyler Boyd, their second-round pick out of Pittsburgh, and that's one of the more ready-to-go receivers that came into this draft. He's not necessarily a home run hitter, but he's a guy that's going to be very solid running routes and catching the ball and has enough speed to play opposite A.J. Green. Obviously, it's tough to replace. I think Marvin Jones is a bigger loss than Sanu, who dropped a number of passes. But right now, especially, you know, as good as they might think Tyler Boyd is, there's a reason he slipped to the second round, and to think that he's going to really take coverage away from A.J. Green when everyone knows he's the guy, it's probably just asking a little bit too much this early.
And I should remind our listeners, guys, as we did last week with the quarterbacks, what we're trying to deal with is NFL veterans, at least 1 year of experience. Obviously, the draft is exciting, but we haven't seen these kids in pads playing against NFL players. So certainly we mentioned them as part of the plan, but it's hard to evaluate or rate them. And it was important to do that explanation there because now we talk about the Cleveland Browns. And no offense, Nate, but Nate's a Browns fan, in addition to being an excellent reporter who never cheers in the press box and is completely objective about all of this. We all know, guys, you look at this Browns team, and work in progress. You got to have something to progress with before you can start to work on it.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's why they went out and they got five pass catchers in the draft here, is that I think Hugh Jackson walked in and he saw with Josh Gordon suspended and not a guy you can count on, there was nothing here to build around at the receiver position at all. When you look at Brian Hartline potentially being your number one, and so with 14 picks, they spent five on pass catchers. They probably realize that they're not all going to come to camp outside of an obvious one in their first-round pick in Corey Coleman. And they're just going to want these guys to come in and compete and let the cream rise to the crop, as they say, because they got to start getting guys who are actually NFL caliber at the receiver position.
Arthur, the curiosity, again, is who becomes the featured weapons. I mean, Gary Barnage has a breakthrough at tight end at the age of 30 or 31. He was the leading producer on this offense last year, at least that has left. They let Travis Benjamin get away. I couldn't begin to guess who the number one, number two running backs are going to be. We've got names there. Hugh Jackson's an outstanding offensive football coach, but you talk about, and all kidding aside, a work in progress. I mean, we can't really even project a depth chart for this team right now.
No, it's difficult. Like Nate said, they certainly went for the power by numbers approach at the receiver and tight end position. But I think we should mention Duke Johnson showed some things as a rookie, especially as a receiver. Hugh Jackson at least is saying publicly he's excited about him in a backfield that also includes Isaiah Crowell. And obviously the hope is that RG3 is going to get back to being a guy who can hurt defenses in more than one way. And of course, spending the 15th overall pick on Corey Coleman, I don't know if it's fair to expect, but they need instant production. There's no doubt about it.
As we wrap this one, I tipped my hand last week. I'm a big RG3 believer. I think, the guy, he showed enough his rookie year in the NFL that he can be a dominant player at the position. But now we've got these stories breaking all week that he was the one who didn't want to do the athletic, use his feet, mobile things that made him so effective as a rookie. Now we're told he's grown, that he understands, that he would never have that kind of issue again, but it does make you wonder, is his head on straight and is he prepared to be the dual threat that he's going to need to be with this football team?
Arguably the NFL's most improved division, the AFC South had a major influx of talent at the skill positions this offseason, whether it was the Texans adding some high profile wide receivers or the Titans adding the Heisman winner. Is there one player that we should be talking about in this division?
Well, what's interesting, and again, I don't mean this to be snide, but the AFC South was one of the weaker divisions, if not the weakest division in the league last year. That means they're going to be picking high. You're going to have a lot of these top prospects coming along. The one that fascinates me is Derrick Henry, and I understand that the Titans have also committed to Marco Murray, but I think Derrick Henry is going to be in a good position to get the carries he needs to establish himself. I expect him to take over that position by the end of the year. I think he's going to be a really good NFL back. He's not a breakaway guy, obviously, but he's a guy you can bang and pound with. We know that's what Mike Mularkey wants to do, and so he'll be a fun one to keep an eye on. So Arthur focuses on the AFC South for us. Well, let's start there. Arthur, Tennessee, We don't honestly know what to expect with Marcus Mariota. He got off to a good start. He leveled off. He got hurt. Let's assume that he takes another step forward at quarterback. Does he have the tools to work with? Right now, it looks like they've really fixed the running back position, but and tight end, of course, Delanie Walker, caught 90 balls last year. Wide receiver, maybe a little bit of a problem for this team.
Oh, didn't you hear Draft Twitter is alive and well in late May, and Derrick Henry's footwork is going to be a major problem at the NFL level. So the Titans are already regretting that pick for sure. I'm being sarcastic, of course. I also think Henry's going to be an excellent pro and is going to push DeMarco Murray in short order. But the receiving core is really the area to focus here, because there's not much to hang your hat on unless you're a Dorial Green Beckham guy, or at least unless you're kind of tantalized by his physical ability, which he did show off a little bit last year, averaging more than 17 yards per reception. So, the Titans are hopeful that Mariota's going to link up with him and get a good chemistry going very soon. But Mike Mularkey didn't mince words. He was asked last week what the weakest position, it wasn't put that way, but what position group needs the most help. And he didn't really hesitate before he said wide receiver. So Mariota is kind of supporting cast, still has a little bit of work to do.
You know, Kevin, let me just ask you real quickly, and this is a little off our topic of the weapons, but Ken Wisenhunt is one of the best quarterback developers in the NFL. He obviously got more out of Marcus Mariota the first few weeks than Mularkey and the rest of them could the rest of the year. I was quite frankly stunned when Mike Mularkey got that job permanently after being the interim. What did you hear around the league? How did that decision impact your thoughts?
That was a little confusing too, and I think Arthur might know a little bit more about this, but it certainly seemed that with everything that's in flux with the family and the ownership there in Tennessee, anything they thought they could do to have some sort of continuity, and they believe Mike Mularkey was going to give them that continuity. I don't know how much of it was Mularkey's coaching background or the fact that he wants to ground and pound this team and turn them into fast smash-mouth football, but they believe that he was the key to that continuity that they felt like they did not have.
All right, guys, let's move on. We've got the Jacksonville Jaguars, and for all the excitement and all the money spent and all the moving around, most of it, Arthur, was actually focused on the defense, not really on the offense. They did, of course, bring Chris Ivory down from the New York Jets. He had his first Pro Bowl season, but he's not somebody you're going to jump up and down about. He's going to share time with T.J. Yeldon. A lot of the offensive weapons were already there. Got to be very excited about Allen Robinson, about Allen Hurns. You look at tight end, Julius Thomas didn't really give them much for their money last year, but he was playing better late in the season. The perception is that he can be even better. Blake Bortles, ending in his third year, appears to be a potential franchise quarterback. This is an offense that teams need to be scared of around the league.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think perhaps the best receiving duo in the league in the Allens, Robinson, and Hurns. And then you forget about guys like Rashad Green, who became a day one impact returner last year. You've still got Marquise Lee, who I know most probably forget was drafted higher than Allen Robinson, who went to his first Pro Bowl last year and I believe was a first-team All-Pro. So all kinds of weapons. I think Nate also alluded to Kelvin Beachum's arrival to push Luke Jokel. I'd be very surprised if Beachum doesn't beat out Jokel for that left tackle position as soon as he's healthy enough coming off the ACL, and they get a couple nice offensive linemen back too. Brandon Linder is a really good player, returns from injury. AJ Cann was a bit of a rookie revelation last year. So you look across the board offensively, and Blake Bortles is in a really, really good position to take yet another step.
We talk a lot hot stove NFL style about winning the offseason. There is some perception that the Jacksonville Jaguars won the offseason. Some people look at the New York Giants, a lot of money spent, a lot of high profile stuff. But the Houston Texans, I think, did a pretty good job. I love Lamar Miller. I think he's a perfect fit for what they want to do. You take a look at Brock Osweiler. I'm not necessarily an Osweiler fan, but it's a big upgrade over where they were before. DeAndre Hopkins, one of the best-kept secrets in the NFL, a Pro Bowl wide receiver. This Houston offense may be going from ground and pound to some explosion overnight. And you know, Nate, it's interesting. You look at Bill O'Brien, another outstanding quarterback developer, wanted no part of Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brian Hoyer, and yet he's the guy who made Osweiler his hand-picked guy. They gave him $72 million. So you have to assume that O'Brien believes that Osweiler is his franchise quarterback.
Yeah, you'd have to believe that. He doesn't really have much choice here, giving him $37 million guaranteed like he did. Bill O'Brien's always been sort of a mystery so far as to what he's thinking about his quarterback. It's on a different guy, and whether it's Ryan Mallett or Brian Hoyer, and kind of runs with it. But he's got one guy here, and he's going to stick with him. And it's going to be interesting to see how the system kind of builds around him with kind of what Gary Kubiak did with Roland Brock out in Denver. And yet here you've got, like you mentioned, you've got speed on one side with Will Fuller, and you've got DeAndre Hopkins on the other. So I'm just intrigued to see kind of how much they lean on him, especially with a guy like Lamar Miller in the backfield who can obviously be a feature back if he wants to.
Hey, Kevin, we've already talked about the Dolphins' significant void at running back. Do we have any idea why they weren't interested in even trying to re-sign Lamar Miller?
You know, the Dolphins' situation with Lamar Miller was so confounding. You know, there was the, you know, hashtag free Lamar Miller trending throughout Miami because they would play him. He would play well, but he was never able to get – he never got a ton of carries out there. We weren't really sure what was going on with Joe Philbin in that offense and why Lamar Miller – wasn't getting the opportunities that he probably deserved, even when he played well. And you would think with Adam Gase there, the way Adam Gase appreciates running the football, that would be a factor. But, you know, maybe this is a Mike Tannenbaum factor. Maybe there's something else there that we just don't know about Lamar Miller's time in Miami, because that was a confusing one.
Arthur, we wrap with the Indianapolis Colts, the perennial division champion until last year when the Texans stole it from him. Obviously, this is about Andrew Luck getting healthy and coming back to be the kind of player he was his first few years in the league. His contract distraction should be over by the time we get to the start of the season. And yet, Ryan Grigson, it's interesting. He's made what I would almost call some Belichickian mid-level moves to try and upgrade this offense. And Luck does have some decent weapons to work with.
Yeah, I think so. At least his starting wide receivers are excellent with T.Y. Hilton. Well, he has one excellent starting wide receiver in T.Y. Hilton, and he has another really fascinating prospect in Dante Moncrief, the 2014 third rounder, who has yet to put it all together. But as soon as he stays on the field and gets the opportunities, I believe he has star power. And then Philip Dorsett is a complete unknown, obviously had a disappointing rookie season, and reports coming out of Indy said he's already dealing with some injuries again. Of course, he's the undersized guy out of Miami last year, so that'll be interesting. They did lose Kobe Fleener as well, decided Dwayne Allen, despite his inability to stay on the field, was the tight end they wanted to pay. And for all the disappointment up and down the offense last year, Frank Gore was pretty darn good behind an offensive line that was really not NFL caliber. And Gore returns, but there's not much behind him. So I think the front line options for this depth chart offensively are pretty good. But if they suffer some injuries, even outside of quarterback, I think there could be some trouble.
What's interesting is that there's a lot of people on the Jacksonville bandwagon, a lot of people on the Houston bandwagon. Some believe Indianapolis bounces back. This doesn't look like the weakest division in the league going into the season this year.
No Super Bowl champion in recent memory has suffered the type of defections in the offseason that the Broncos have dealt with. It starts at the quarterback position, obviously replacing Hall of Famer Peyton Manning. Does Mark Sanchez or Paxton Lynch have enough firepower to keep this team in playoff contention?
Well, they're better than good enough. I mean, you talk about Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. You got one of the best pairs of starting wideouts in the league. They were not the problem last year. People don't even realize in what they're calling a down year for DT. He had over 100 catches and over 1,100 yards again. So they're fine at wide receiver. They've got their running backs back and C.J. Anderson. They paid a lot more than they wanted to for him, but he's there. Ronnie Hillman is still there as well. You look at tight end, I guess, is the one issue to me, Nate. They didn't appear to necessarily have the answer when they let Julius Thomas get away in free agency, which they didn't really have a choice on. They didn't have the money to pay everybody. But then Owen Daniels comes up big in the playoffs, and Owen Daniels is still on the free agent market. So I suppose it's more about tight end and quarterback than it is about wide receiver or running back in Denver.
Yeah, it's usually not the case with the Gary Kubiak team, as he's always about developing quarterbacks, and he's got an unhealthy obsession with tight ends, and it was interesting to see Owen Daniels finally part ways. He's been with Terry Kubiak every single year of his career, and so now you're going to see kind of these other guys compete, whether it's Virgil Green or Jeff Heirman, some talented younger players who just haven't really gotten to show it. Heirman's dealt with some injuries, but quarterback's really the interesting one to look at with this team, because you touched on it. At wide receiver, they've got as much talent as anyone in the league with the starting guys that they have. But right now it's going to be either Mark Sanchez, who's got kind of a set ceiling but a lot of experience, or Paxton Lynch, who's the opposite. He's got all kinds of upside, but he's really got to learn to develop as a guy doing five-step drops and taking snaps under center and calling plays. And so it's a tough situation to put in either guy for a team that's trying to defend a Super Bowl, trying to win another division, trying to get back to the playoffs. But if anyone knows how to work with quarterbacks and get them up to speed, it's Gary Kubiak. It'll be interesting to see which guy he goes with and how quickly they do get up to speed this year.
You know, Nate, the popular pick in the division seems to be the Kansas City Chiefs, in part because of the Broncos' losses on defense more than offense, plus at quarterback. And certainly at running back, they hope to have, of course, Jamaal Charles back after his second ACL. They were fine with Jakandrick West and Spencer Ware after he went down. Travis Kelce appears to be an ascending tight end. Jeremy Maclin, not the typical free agent. He got paid and he played even better, but no real depth at wide receiver and at tight end. It's hard to figure out how they're going to fill out that wide receiver group.
That's a big question. Is Jeremy Maclin was, he was still a godsend last year coming in and ending that long drought for a receiver to score a touchdown. A guy can kind of take advantage of some play action and make plays after the catch, make Alex Smith try and beat him with guys like Albert Wilson or Rod Strader. And so, he's going to lean on Travis Kelce a lot because that's what he loves to do. And having a breakaway back like Jamaal Charles back will be great. He's not Alex Smith. He's usually a guy who takes a lot of shots downfield, but at some point, you think about like the Patriots game in the playoffs. At some point, if they're going to try and take this next step and challenge people all across the field, someone's going to have to step up. It's not Jeremy Maclin.
We apologize to our listeners. A bad phone connection there for just a second, but we'll get that cleaned up for you. Nate, the Oakland Raiders, there's a lot of excitement about the Oakland Raiders, but this is where some of the question marks come in. Latavius Murray was very productive last year, but nobody gets excited about him at running back, has a hard time holding on to the football. Amari Cooper is very exciting at wide receiver, but once you get past that, Michael Crabtree's a nice ball catcher, tight end isn't special. Do the Raiders have enough weapons?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, you're right. Their depth isn't going to overwhelm you, but I mean, Seth Roberts really came through and added some nice contributions last year. Like you mentioned, Michael Crabtree really found himself a role opposite Amari Cooper, a guy who can kind of slide across the field and make plays in a number of different spots at receiver. And what they really wanted to fix this year was their running game. And I know we're talking about the weapons here, but a big part of Latavius Murray's kind of up and down play was the fact that their interior blocking wasn't that great. So maybe bringing in Kalesi Assembly from Baltimore will start to answer that. And then really the onus is going to be on Latavius Murray to really step up. He's no longer going to have that crutch if I don't have blocking inside. He's got to really fix his fumbling issues because that became a problem. And he's just got to be able to show some consistency. And if he can do that, I mean, you got to think the Raiders, all the weapons they have in the passing game and how they fix some holes on defense, this has got to be the year they take the next step. Or otherwise, you're going to start looking at a new running back there in Oakland.
Well, and finally, the San Diego Chargers here, Nate. And Nate has specialized in the AFC West for us. Apparently, Antonio Gates is going to attempt to be the first grandfather ever to go to the Pro Bowl as a tight end. And nobody's betting against him. Certainly Keenan Allen, when healthy, is a really nice option at wide receiver. Malcolm Floyd has retired. I don't want to say bad, but disappointing rookie year from Melvin Gordon last year. And yet Philip Rivers soldiers on, but you can't be too thrilled about the cadre of weapons that he's got to work with.
I mean, no, it doesn't blow you away, but I mean, these guys just had so many injuries last year. I mean, Keenan Allen was on pace to set a record for receptions in a season, and then he had the lacerated kidney issue, and just guys kept dropping like flies. I mean, Antonio Gates had the suspension. He kind of had issues all around, and so they got a lot younger going from Floyd to a guy named Travis Benjamin, there's some question there about if he's going to be able to get off the line and produce early in a passing play, which is what Philip Rivers loves, but he fits Ken Wisenhunt's vertical system very well with his deep speed, and so him opposite Keenan Allen, a possession receiver, is intriguing. And then I think Antonio Gates, as old as he is, you're right, grandfather age there, at 35 years old, he could still really play when he's out there. He had 630 yards last year in just 11 games, and he's going to be in a nice spot here to groom Hunter Henry, the tight end out of Arkansas. They went and got in the second round. That guy's not really a blocker, but he's got really soft hands, and to learn by that, Antonio Gates might have some of the softest hands we've ever seen from a tight end. It's going to be a nice little situation there, and I think if these guys are healthy, Philip Rivers is going to have a lot more help this year than he had last year.
That does it for the AFC, but if you stick with us after the break, we will discuss what's going on in the NFC in terms of new firepower for all the quarterbacks. Before we start delving into all the new weapons in the NFC, we want to remind you that you can catch the NFC East Way We Hear It segment on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. As for the NFC champion Panthers, Cam Newton might not have to do it all by himself. What does the return of a healthy Kelvin Benjamin mean for this offense?
Now, there's any question that's got to be a difference maker. He was their number one wide receiver. He was all rookie the year before. They expect him to be the go-to guy in that offense. Now, of course, Greg Olsen has been that. When you put the two of them together, it's almost an interesting dynamic in the way that Bill Belichick likes to match up his tight ends. Obviously, Benjamin, a wide receiver, you got Olsen inside, but they become a bit of a matchup nightmare for teams, and it's got to make a difference. But, you know, Kevin, it's interesting to me, and Kevin Fishbane has been our expert on the NFC South. The Carolina Panthers led the NFL in scoring last year. They almost set a record. And yet when you look at their other offensive numbers, they were very good on the ground. They were only 20th throwing the football. And in fact, Cam Newton didn't even complete 60% of his passes, which is the minimum kind of bellwether mark in the NFL these days. And part of it is because these weapons don't really excite you. I mean, I love Jonathan Stewart, but A, he's never going to stay healthy, and B, he's a banger who's going to average 4.1 but rarely go for more than 5. And other than Benjamin at wide receiver, you know, if you got to count on Ted Ginn Jr. as a diet, you may have some problems.
Yeah, it's so funny, Hub, because you look at this team right now, and you don't necessarily think if you look at it in a vacuum, you're thinking, how could this team be predicted to win the NFC? But it's the same talent we looked at last year, and as you mentioned it, they really stepped up, and Greg Olsen was a big part of that. Jonathan Stewart staying as healthy as long as he did, and the way that offensive line really overachieved was huge. And then, of course, Cam Newton with the MVP season. So curious to see how defenses played them and then how they incorporate Kelvin Benjamin in the offense. So you got to imagine Devin Funchess maybe takes that second step. Corey Brown or Philly Brown could maybe step up a little bit too. So these guys have more room to improve. I'm just kind of curious how the running game is going to hold up with Stewart and Tolbert and Fozzie Whitaker.
Yeah, I know from talking to Ron Rivera, they're very excited about Devin Funchess as well as getting Benjamin back, and they think they can use Philly Brown differently once they get Benjamin back, and if Funchess takes that next step. I don't know what Ted Ginn Jr.'s future is going to be, but they see Philly Brown as the guy who takes the top off that defense on a fairly regular basis. So I know in Carolina they feel pretty good about it. Now you look at the Atlanta Falcons, Kevin, and this is another team. Roddy White, boy, you know, once he got down the back stretch, it faded fast. And of course, Julio Jones, I think, is the best receiver in the NFL right now. Beyond that, you look and you try and sort out the weapons again. Devontae Freeman, a huge year with 14 touchdowns, and yet coming into this season, he still doesn't scream number one back to me. They do get Tevin Coleman back, so interesting pieces to work with here. But again, it's not that exciting.
No, it's not. And you wonder why the Falcons didn't do more at wide receiver than just bringing in Mohamed Sanu. I mean, they were excited about Justin Hardy. I think they think he could be, you know, they are certainly probably more excited than people on the outside who aren't familiar with Hardy, who was their fourth-round pick last year. But, you know, outside that, they don't have any depth at wide receiver. I like the Austin Hooper pick at tight end, third-rounder out of Stanford, because outside Jacob Tammy, they don't have a good pass-catching option there. You know, I think Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman could be a nice 1-2 punch for years to come in that backfield. But with what happened with Matt Ryan last year, you know, you expect him to be better in second year of this offense, but he's going to need more than just Julio Jones to really make that Falcons offense hum again.
And you know, Nate, I know you've been focusing on the AFC North and the Bengals. Mohamed Sanu, a nice player, but he's not Roddy White. I don't know your observations about what the Falcons are really getting in Sanu.
No, I don't get it at all. I mean, Sanu was never impressive to me. I thought, you know, he filled in when Marvin Jones had some injury issues as the number two in Cincinnati, but this is a guy that was among the league leaders in drop percentages last year. And so they kind of pumped a lot more money into him than he earned, and it kind of smacked of desperation for a team that, like Kevin said, beyond Julio Jones, they just don't have anything to pull coverage away from him. So they're looking at a guy like Sanu who kind of worked with A.J. Green, and they think, okay, maybe we can bring him in and he can benefit in a similar role opposite Julio Jones. But production-wise, he hasn't really proven to be a consistent performer yet.
You can't really talk the Saints' weapons without talking about Drew Brees and where he's at. Now, he has tended to throw more picks in recent seasons. Last year, the first time in 3 years, he didn't quite get to 5,000, although he was just, I think, 100 or less than 100 yards short. And he's going to be 38 years old. And so as Drew Brees goes, so go these weapons. Brandon Cooks, they're very excited about. Ben Watson had a huge year for him at tight end. They decided not to bring him back. So this really spins more around the quarterback than it does the other weapons. And, Kevin, it's interesting when you look at this ball club. I'm talking, of course, still about New Orleans. Brandon Cooks is exciting. There's no question about that. They've got another young wide receiver or two that they like. They signed Kobe Fleener to come in at tight end. What's puzzling, though, is that this window is closing. It's not opening. And they've got so much work to do on defense that they don't seem to be able to focus on replacing the parts that they've lost on offense.
Yeah, and I think that their salary cap restrictions really played a role in that, too. And, you know, when you factor that in with the fact that their defense was, as you mentioned, so bad the last couple of years that they needed to, you know, use a first and a second and a fourth round pick on getting guys for that defense, that the only thing they could do really on offense was get Michael Thomas and hope that he could be the perfect complement for Brandon Cooks and replacement for Marcus Colson. But we talked about the Falcons and how they have a little depth at wide receiver. You mentioned the Saints, Willie Snead, Brandon Coleman, and not a whole lot behind them. And then running back, you can't expect Mark Ingram to play 16 games. You can't expect C.J. Spiller to play 16 games. They have Travis Cadet and Tim Hightower, too. But, you know, what Kobe Fleener is going to be the center of this offense, I imagine. If he can be a huge player as a primetime tight end for Drew Brees, and maybe even close to what Jimmy Graham was, the other deficiencies in depth aren't going to be an issue. We can see the Saints offense get back to rolling like we're used to.
Kevin, I've got just about a minute left for you to flush out the Tampa Bay depth chart for us, although I will start by saying there is no way I would have given the muscle hamster, Doug Martin, who no longer wants to be called the muscle hamster, the kind of money they did. He had a great year. I wouldn't let him get away, but I would have franchised him and made him prove it again.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially with the way running backs are these days. But I don't know how many options they thought they had at the position and with the weapons on offense. You know, Vincent Jackson, how many more years does he have left? You know what you have in Mike Evans. You need help for Jameis Winston. You got the offensive line shored up with the two draft picks last year. But, Hub, this is the division of thin wide receiving corps. They don't have anybody after Evans and Jackson. You know, Adam Humphries, Evan Spencer are some of the guys back there. Maybe Kenny Bell steps up, the fifth-round pick from last year who was hurt last season. But that shows you how much they're hoping they can rely on Doug Martin again and that 1-2 punch he has with Charles Sims to help Jameis Winston in year two.
And, of course, Austin Seferian Jenkins, three names, one of the better young tight ends in the NFL. So there's some stuff there to work with for Jameis Winston, but we wonder if there's going to be enough. If I had a cool nickname like the Muscle Hamster, I'd just embrace it. I wouldn't be running away from it, but apparently he doesn't like it anymore.
I'll tell you, Doug Martin, the nickname Muscle Hamster, it's a lot better than Money Hamster. We need to make sure that he is not going in the tank after getting paid this offseason. Moving on to the NFC North, the story, of course, was the regression of the Green Bay Packers offense. It was rather stunning, but the question becomes, does the return of Jordy Nelson mean everything goes back to the status quo for Aaron Rodgers' group?
No, I think it was completely the weapon that he didn't have in Jordy Nelson and the protection he didn't get as that offensive line got banged up so terribly late in the season. Randall Cobb clearly is one of the best number twos in the NFL, but when asked to be a number one, it just wasn't going to happen. You look at Aaron Rodgers, and he continues to be the all-time leading passer in passer rating efficiency in the NFL by over 10%. His rating is still at 105 for his career. Next is Brady and Manning, right around 96, along with Phillip Rivers and Steve Young. He ended up with 31 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, so it's pretty hard to say he had a bad year. Arthur, Jordy Nelson was one of the most underrated players in the NFL over the last 2-3 years. Oh, he was going to the Pro Bowl. I don't know how he can be underrated. I think the perception was that there was depth there. The depth proved not to be enough, and yet Ty Montgomery got banged up a lot. You look at Devontae Adams, who still shows flashes. I've loved Jeff Janis for 3 years. I was waiting for what we saw in that Cardinal playoff game. Now, whether he gets a chance to do that on a regular basis this year or not, we don't know. And then you get to the running game and everything that happened with Eddie Lacy.
Yeah, the loss of Jordy Nelson, it starts there, certainly. There was a major lack of speed and size, and that prevented the Packers from getting the type of mismatch situations that helped Rodgers flourish in the passing game. Not that he needs a ton of help, but Devonta Adams wasn't ready, and frankly, he was banged up, had a high ankle sprain he was dealing with. Ty Montgomery, same deal, also an ankle, and Randall Cobb had just a terrible season. He wasn't explosive, he wasn't dependable, and clearly you saw that he kind of shrunk when he became the focal focal point of the offense. Eddie Lacy's problem was the exact opposite. He needs to shrink, and it sounds like maybe he has this offseason, but clearly when he was playing at, what, 255, maybe just a shade under, you didn't see the same explosion. You didn't see the same stamina, and clearly in the playoffs, him getting tracked from behind was kind of when everything came home to roost for him. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to get his situation in order. He's in a contract year and still has all the talent in the world, but if he doesn't get that nutrition plan under wraps, he's going to be out of the league sooner than later.
Nate, let me get a quick comment from you on this. I had the number one pick in the Pro Football Weekly in-house fantasy league last year. I hate having the number one pick. And I took Eddie Lacy. And I'll tell you what, we all know what a joke and a mistake it was. And yet with what I've heard from him this year, and I wouldn't take a running back number one again. I would take a quarterback with the number one pick, but we'll talk about that a couple shows down the road. I would take a chance on Lacy again with everything that I've heard during the offseason. I've seen him. He is in much better shape. This kid still has a chance to be special when we talk about the weapons that the Packers have.
Oh, yeah, and you saw that 2 years ago, which is the whole reason why you drafted him number one. Everyone had these big expectations for him, and it's almost like the hype got a little bit to his head there, and he kind of waxed, and he kind of bulked up in a not good way with size. And this year, it's the opposite. It's a lot of people doubting him, and you already see him. He's slimming down. You see the photos out there, and you hear the reports out there of him really working to improve that. And you got to think after, kind of the way last year went for that offense around Aaron Rodgers, that's a guy who's probably holding a lot of people accountable, and it starts with Eddie Lacy. Certainly the way his coaching staff has even called him out. So this is the year for him to get back to what he was, and he knows that starts with his weight, and obviously that's getting down there. And so now we're going to see if he can play a little more explosive with a little more conditioning than kind of what we saw last year.
Arthur, the Minnesota Vikings are one of the most difficult teams in the NFL to discuss in this context. Adrian Peterson, going into his 10th season, will turn 31 years old. He led the NFL in rushing again last year. There is no sign of slowing up. His yardage total wasn't what you would expect from him. Is Laquon Treadwell and Stephon Diggs enough to ignite that passing game? Can Kyle Rudolph take the next step they've been waiting for the last couple years? And part of the question is Teddy Bridgewater capable of taking advantage of it, or was he being held back by the weapons? So to me, this is a bit of a puzzle.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Certainly, Stephon Diggs emerging after the first quarter of the season was huge for the wide receiving core. There was really no one else capable of doing so. But the Vikings really, told us their feelings about that position when they went and got Laquon Treadwell. And we've talked about on this show, Pro Football Weekly's highest rated receiver, for him to be the fifth one off the board in the first round because of that 40 time is really just a blessing in disguise, I believe, for the Vikings. I think he's going to be a tremendous fit. And Kyle Rudolph hasn't provided the big plays, but actually had a career high in catches last year. So, if everything's improved a little bit, the offensive line, the receiving core, Adrian Peterson's fumbling issues, I think this offense can take the next step, but obviously it all revolves around Bridgewater.
Well, and Kevin Fishbane is actually our beat guy with the Bears at Pro Football Weekly, and Kevin, I don't expect a big regression from Cutler. I think he has matured in his own play, in his own mind. I think he'll be okay with Dowell Loggins. The question is the weapons. I just talked about what they've lost. Now, you do plug in Kevin White this year. The Jaguars and the Bears are the only two teams in the league that have two top 10 picks this year when you think about it, because White, number 7 overall last year, didn't play at all. The hope is if Jeffrey is healthy, if White is what they hope he will be, they could be pretty good at wide receiver, but they don't have any surefire answers at tight end. Zach Miller, a great number 2. Jeremy Langford, nice-looking rookie who averaged 3.4 a pop last year. Do they have enough besides Jeffrey and White, assuming White is what they hope he is?
Yeah, well, they're going to have to hope, but that White is, who they expect him to be, and everything we've heard about his recovery has been very positive. He's been at 100% for a couple months now, and Jeffrey's training by on his own right now in Florida, trying to get rid of those soft tissue injuries. Here's the thing, Hub. It's such a big if with this group. If Jeffrey, Royal, and Kevin White stay healthy, Jay Cutler's got one of the best groups, threesomes of receivers that he's maybe ever had in this league. He and Eddie Royal were lighting up training camp in the preseason before Royal started having injuries last summer and then into the fall. So if Royal stays healthy, maybe they have something there. Maybe one of the backups steps up. But I think you point out a key thing. One of these running backs, Kadeem Carey, Jordan Howard, Jeremy Langford, they got to find a way to replace Matt Forte. And Zach Miller's got to be able to replicate what he did last season.
Arthur, Amir Abdullah can be the number 2 running back and kickoff returner on my team 7 days a week and twice on Sunday, but he appears to be it in the running game. You look at the loss of Calvin Jones. Certainly Golden Tate is a solid and outstanding number 2 receiver. Marvin Jones, maybe a 3, maybe a 2. the Lions don't appear to have a lot they're going to beat you with.
No, they don't. I think it's really kind of a by-committee approach that they're going to take, and frankly, that's probably smart trying to replace a Hall of Famer like Calvin Johnson. So if Golden Tate and Marvin Jones combine to give you really prolific number one production, maybe you're okay, and I like the way their skill sets kind of complement each other, with Tate's sort of smaller suddenness and Marvin Jones having a little bit of speed and ability to go up and get the football. So I think they could be okay there. They like T.J. Jones, hasn't done much in his first 2 years in the league, brought in Jeremy Curley, a slot option, but also kind of just a guy. I think the two names to focus on here, and I like Amir Abdullah, actually. He got more chances as the season wore on. I don't think he's ever going to be a bell cow, but I think if they use him properly and he gets into space, he can definitely be a game breaker for them. But Eric Ebron is obviously the other one. Spent a high round first rounder on him in 2014, a high round pick, obviously, and he's done very little. He did progress last year, but you still didn't see the great numbers, so he does have that size, that profile, to maybe get some of the red zone opportunities that Calvin Johnson used to absorb. And I think as much as anyone, you need to look at Ebron and Abdullah. And then also in the backfield, they have Steven Ridley, now 2 years removed from ACL surgery. Theo Riddick, one of the better pass-catching backs in the NFL.
Here's the question. He's been the best wide receiver in the NFL over the last 7 years. Is Calvin Johnson a Hall of Famer? He's certainly in the conversation. Some people think he's a slam dunk. When we look at the numbers of other guys who aren't in, I don't know that it's a slam dunk.
I certainly understand Hub's opinion. I would agree, Calvin Johnson, no slam dunk for Canton, but I would remind folks that Gale Sayers had some of the same questions in terms of a lack of longevity in his career, and sometimes you just have to reward greatness for what it is. As we conclude our discussion on the new weapons around the NFL, we take a look at the NFC West and Chip Kelly's high-powered offense. Are there enough weapons for whatever quarterback is under center?
It's really tough because they've got Anquan Boldin apparently not coming back at wide receiver. Of course, Michael Crabtree left in free agency a few years ago. They traded off Vernon Adams last year. They try and go with Vance McDonald at tight end. They do hope to get a healthy Carlos Hyde back, and Carlos Hyde is saying all the right things as far as playing running back in Chip Kelly's system. But at the end of the day, you look at the wide receiver problem. The only guy they brought in was the sixth-round pick out of Michigan State, and they didn't seem to feel they had tremendous need there. They've got Torrey Smith, who they spent a ton of money on. But, Nate, I'll come to you on this one. The 49ers, Trent Baalke was the executive of the year in the NFL 4 seasons ago. It's not just coaching. This team has not had good personnel moves over recent seasons either.
Yeah, this one's amazing to think about, because Chip Kelly's whole exit from Philadelphia is because he took too much of a role, did too much bringing guys in and shipping guys out, kind of based on his weird philosophies on personnel decisions. And here he is, and he kind of said, I'm not going to do that again. And pretty much nothing happened on that front. They didn't bring anyone in of note, and they kind of let guys go. You mentioned Anquan Boldin, Alex Boone on the offensive line, and I am equally stunned that they didn't go after someone, any kind of receiver out there, not just with Chip Kelly's love of speed at that position, but just with how crucial that is with his offense, with kind of these combination calls and package plays and creating receivers receiving options at different levels. I don't really know if they're going to try this Colin Kaepernick thing, and I think they certainly should. I don't know who he's going to throw to outside the numbers.
Let's stay at the bottom of the division before we get to the big boys. You've got, of course, the the Los Angeles Rams. I'll get that right by 2018. They're in Los Angeles now. There's not a team in the league, Kevin, that wouldn't love to have Todd Gurley at running back. I don't even care about the depth. I know that the knee is a concern, but Todd Gurley is likely the only franchise running back left in the NFL, unless Le'Veon Bell can stay healthy and get it done. They've got guys that they drafted high at wide receiver, including Tavon Austin, who really haven't worked out. They're not real strong at the tight end position, and yet there's a good chance they want to throw Jared Goff to the Wolves on day one.
Yeah, well, I think Jared Goff, for his own sake, should just get ready to just give the ball to Todd Gurley as many times as he can. He's gonna have his opportunities, because they're gonna stack the box. They're gonna force Goff to make plays. And as you mentioned, he does not have a wealth of wide receiver talent there, and the Rams aren't gonna be able to get it for a while after considering how much they moved around to make the move to get Goff. Farrell Cooper, their fourth round pick, maybe he factors in. Brian Quick has shown flashes at times in his career. So is Stedman Bailey, but not really enough. Is Kenny Britt going to be the answer? You mentioned Tavon Austin. They're extremely thin at tight end, so it's going to be a Todd Gurley show, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on Goff to make the receivers there better by being a good thrower.
Arthur, there's a reason the Seattle Seahawks and Arizona Cardinals are at the top of the NFC and the NFC West as well. I love what Seattle did in the draft this year with C.J. Procise to go with Thomas Rawls, who's coming back. He had the huge start last year as a rookie. Normally you'd lose a Marshawn Lynch. You'd say, whoa, we're in trouble. These two kids could be really interesting. I also expect Tyler Lockett to be one of the breakout players in the NFL this year at wide receiver. I don't know that Doug Baldwin can do what he did last year, but he's a guy who's had 14 touchdowns. And then you got Jimmy Graham, who you got to try and plug back into the equation. So I can't run the offense for him. I don't want to run the offense for him. But as far as weapons, I think Russell Wilson has enough to work with.
In some ways, Jimmy Graham kind of that. Of course, he's not a rookie or a second-year player, but extra first-round pick because of the trade and what they gave up to get him. And I couldn't agree more about Tyler Lockett. I think they drafted him last year with the expectation he was going to be an electrifying returner, and anything they got in the receiving game was a bonus. I think he had 6 touchdowns. He turned out to out-snap Jermaine Kearse, and I expect him to continue ascending. Doug Baldwin in a contract year. To me, it's a little bit telling that there hasn't been much movement on a new deal, because I kind of think Baldwin's just a guy who caught fire at the right time. I know that sounds crazy because he had one of the best runs in NFL history, but Tyler Lockett's a lot more talented than he is. And then getting back to what's going on at running back, they also got Alex Collins out of Arkansas in round 5. We had a much higher grade on him at Pro Football Weekly, so they could be okay there. The one caution I would present is that if Thomas Rawls is going to try and mimic Marshawn Lynch's running style like we saw last year, that's a kind of a leap of faith to assume he's going to stay healthy. Obviously, after being that rookie breakout, he wasn't able to do it for a full season. But I do love C.J. Procise, especially in that Fred Jackson role with his pass-catching ability.
31 down and 1 to go. It's fitting it's the Arizona Cardinals. I don't know if there's a team more loaded with big-time weapons in the NFL. You look at the running game, David Johnson, for his 13 touchdowns, really didn't get the job until late in the season. I think he could be the breakout player in the NFL this year at running back, could rival Todd Gurley, Adrian Peterson. They've got Chris Johnson coming back again behind him. At wide receiver, Larry Fitzgerald finds the fountain of youth. They've got Michael Floyd across from him. They've got John Brown to take the top off the defense. This team is loaded with weapons. The question for them is going to be, how does Carson Palmer bounce back from his playoff nightmare, because he's going to have no shortage of toys to play with.
That wraps up our discussion of the offensive weapons around the league. Once again, if you missed this chat about the AFC and NFC East, you can find it in The Way We Hear It as part of the Pro Football Weekly podcast on iTunes. Of course, as always, check us out each week on Blog Talk Radio, and be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also find us all on Twitter, and we can't wait to have you back again next week for another edition of the Pro Football Weekly podcast.
The Shaw Media Podcast Network has a lot of really great sports podcasts, but are you more than just a sports fan?
You need to be listening to The Unprintable Podcast, which is a pop culture podcast with voices from journalists like myself, Nicole Franz.
And me, Jason Frummer.
As we discuss TV, movies, and of course, Jason's favorite subject,
music.
We'll also have some arts coverage, and you can catch special guests and exclusive interviews.
It's all right here on Unprintable. You can find us in the Shaw Media Podcast Network, available on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Remember.
Hi, everyone. This is Hub Arkish, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and I'm here to let you know that Pro Football Weekly is back. To celebrate, we're giving away a collector's edition hoodie a day for the next 60 days. Just go to profootballweekly.com/hoodie, enter your email, and if you've won, we'll email you right back. While you're there, check out the site. You want an insider's guide to the NFL? Go to profootballweekly.com for all the news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Pro Football Weekly, the best coverage in the NFL since 1967.